What's up, everybody? I am your host, Chris Hampton. Welcome to episode 77 of the Power Company Podcast, brought to you by PowerCompanyClimbing.com. It is beautiful and snowy today in Lander, which frankly seems more appropriate than the 40 degrees it was last week. The high is predicted as 5 today, 3 tomorrow. That's negative 16 for our Celsius friends out there. And actually, this cold and snow is so much easier than the sloppy, gray, humid Cincinnati winters that I'm used to. So for all those people who were like, how are you going to handle Wyoming winters? Better. That's how I'm going to handle them. And I can just load more wood into the stove and make the 10-second walk out to the machine shop to train, and life is wonderful. Speaking of which, I'm climbing again on jugs, doing laps, and the finger is cooperating. My rehab efforts are paying off quickly, which is great. And that's another story, though, one that I detailed in episode 15 of Don't Call It a Comeback on the We Scream Like Eagles podcast, which is our bonus podcast for all of our supporters. So if you're interested in those extra episodes and other rewards, you can check us out at patreon.com/powercompanypodcast, or there's a convenient little clickable link right there in the show notes on your pocket supercomputer. And for as little as $1 a month, or frankly, whatever matches the value you find in this thing, you get a couple of extra episodes per month. So check us out over there. A couple of quick announcements about what's going on around here. Tees and tanks will be back in stock soon. Some of you have been asking, and I'm finalizing designs with the printer today, and she'll be starting on them this week. Finger care kits, people have also been asking about those, will be back in soon as well. They sold out way faster than I could keep up with, so those will be back. And I'm also in talks with Sport Rock in Virginia about hanging out for a week in mid-April at their locations. So hopefully getting to work with some of the VA crew out there. And if you're in the area, be on the lookout for more info about that. Mid-April, hopefully I'll see you guys out there. Okay, enough about me. Let's talk about today's illustrious guest who needs no introduction. But if you've been hiding under a rock, except we all sort of do that, don't we? So if you've not been hungrily consuming climbing magazines, films, news, and social media, which all of you have, or you wouldn't be listening to this, then you may not know much about Beth Rodden. Beth was one of the original crop of kid superstars back in the mid to late 90s. Started as a gym rat comp climber, but 3 years into climbing did her first 14A, to bolt or not to be, which coincidentally was America's first 14A several years before Beth. And that made her the youngest woman to do so at the time. Fast forward only 2 years, and she freed El Cap via the FA of Lurking Fear with Tommy Caldwell. And a few years later, did a little route called The Nose, becoming the first woman to free two routes on El Cap. That same year, she became the first American woman to do 14B. Talk about progression, people. The girl was flying. 2 years later, she climbed Meltdown, which at 14C is now 10 years old and still unrepeated, and is the hardest trad route done by a woman. I could have skipped all of that and just said she's an absolute badass, right? I mean, we aren't really here to talk about her climbing, so I thought I'd give you a little bit of it. We're not here to talk about the kidnapping in Kyrgyzstan. We're here to talk kids, parenting and climbing, the long-term project. Now, I've known Beth for a while, and I'm super happy that she was able to make time to sit down with me earlier this winter in Jackson, Wyoming, after some plane delays, and she was on a busy schedule. We talk kids, traveling with little ones, and what it all means for Beth's own climbing, which I think is super interesting. So let's get into it.
Climbing has so much to offer. Like the old blizzards going out there when you're 80, like dusting off your shoes and climbing up the easy climbs. Or you can piddle out in your late 20s. I'd rather be the old blizzard. He wasn't a good sleeper, though, in the beginning. It took, I would say, when he was two, when he was two.
Oh, that's when he started.
Yeah, so, sleeping through the night. Maybe so two and a half.
It's just been about a year.
A year. Yeah. Of lovely sleep. But I'm a terrible sleeper anyways.
So I am, too.
It's not fun.
No, sleeping sucks for me. I'm trying to get better at it. It's something I've gotten way better at in the last 6 years or so.
Yeah.
But still definitely a big like hole in my game.
Yeah.
I feel like I could do it way better.
Yeah. I always wake up in the middle of the night and then I'm just sitting there awake.
Yeah. So. Was that something since Kyrgyzstan?
That has been since the divorce.
Okay.
Yep. I was pretty darn good sleeper actually. Like could sleep almost anywhere for a really long time. Hmm. And then I don't know. I'm sure it was a bunch of different things like the divorce, but I don't know. I have a lot of friends and I wonder if there's like some sort of hormonal thing that happens like in your early 30s or whatever. Cause I have other friends that did it.
We change so much as we get older.
Yeah.
I tried to not believe that for a long time, but now it's like, if I sit for an hour, it's hard for me to get up and walk.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely starting to take hold,
yeah,
which I'm not stoked about, but
it happens.
Just have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So the reason I wanted to talk to you is you've sort of reinvented yourself and I love seeing that, especially in this outdoor space where, you know, when you were coming up as a young climber, I had a lot of friends who were in the same category as you. And there was a lot of talk about, where do we go with this? Like, mm-hmm. can climbing be a career? And if so, what does that look like when mm-hmm. you can't really, when you're not climbing as hard as you once were, mm-hmm. you know, what happens? And you've reinvented yourself. And something that I think is really endearing and valuable is that you've been very open
mm-hmm.
and vulnerable in a way that a lot of the top climbers never are.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think the media or, you know, the outdoor industry in general has sort of put you into this place of being sort of the de facto expert on pregnancy and motherhood now,
mm-hmm.
on your blog, you don't come across as if you're trying to be an expert. You come across more of, I'm trying to learn with you guys. Do you guys have any tips for me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's what I do. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really cool place to be. And I want to learn the things that you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my daughter's 20, so I'm not dealing with it currently.
Yeah.
I
should be interviewing you, actually.
But I have several moms who are clients of mine and a couple of pregnant women who are clients and mm-hmm. training through their pregnancies. And so I spent a lot of time learning about it. And I really want to know tips for after the pregnancy. Like, what's it like? How does your climbing change? How does your life change?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So let's dig into that. First off, when you were, after you had Theo,
mm-hmm.
which was 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I know you had a really rough postpartum.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about
that? Sure. Yeah. I had a really rough physical postpartum. The birth was great and amazing. I feel really fortunate about that. It went fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But most of my friends that I had kind of looked up to or people that I had interviewed and asked questions about, they kind of bounced back pretty quick.
Right.
My one friend, Lynn, she's a superhuman, and she went for, I think she went for a run at week two or right. something like that. Right. And then she went on this, you know, 5-week trip to Font with her, you know, little mm-hmm. baby after that. And I could,
what's his name?
Conrad.
Conrad. Okay.
Yeah. He's about a year older than Theo. He's a rad little kid. But I could hardly walk from like the bed to the bathroom, honestly. I had a cystocele, which is like a slight prolapse of the bladder. So it literally felt like my insides were just going to fall out.
Oh man.
And it was just, I mean, you're used to, as an athlete, like I'm used to climbing injuries, you know, right, but
pushing through and things
yeah,
like that. Yeah,
totally. But all of a sudden to have something like that, it was like totally disconcerting. I'm just like, my insides are going to fall out. And this is not a knock on my doctor or my medical professionals, but Western medicine, I mean, you have a baby and they're like, see you in 6 weeks,
right?
You know? And I was just like, there's so much going on. Luckily, our friend is a home birth midwife. And so we had her come and do the postpartum care. And she was like, you need to lay in bed for like, don't, you know, lay down for like 6 weeks, or I mean 2 weeks, you know, don't get out of bed really, you know, just really be gentle to your body. She was like the first person who ever told me and really got through my head to nurture my body.
That's tough for an athlete
yeah.
as well, because we're used to making ourselves better by punishing our bodies.
Totally. I mean, I'd looked at my body the whole time until postpartum, or maybe partway through pregnancy, as this thing I could use and abuse. Like right. it was this like vehicle for like my success or to sort through emotions or something like that, you know, but it was never, wait, I should maybe try and take care of this somehow. And right. it serves another purpose.
Yeah.
So yeah, so my physical postpartum was rough. Like I would say it took me a few months before I could like wear Theo on in a carrier and like walk him around the block
yeah.
to have like that heal. And then I had really, Theo and I struggled really a lot with breastfeeding. He had this thing called tongue tie, which makes it so he couldn't latch very well. And so I had all these mastitis infections where like I had 103 fever and I had to go on antibiotics and stuff. Anyways, so like the first 3 months, like I really felt was like that fourth trimester that at least our midwife talked about.
Sure.
You know, it was just like this healing process or yeah. whatnot.
So when were you able to get back outside and do things? Not even climbing. When were you able to get out and yeah. hike around or whatever?
Randy went back to work maybe after 6 or 8 weeks, I'd say. And so that's when I kind of like took over. Until then, he was like carrying Theo all around and stuff.
Right.
So when Theo was like 3 months is when I started like walking around the block and doing that sort of thing and being able to make dinner for us. And then at 4 months, we went on this family trip with my parents and my brother and his family to Hawaii with all the kids. And that actually really helped. Like swimming in the warm water was yeah. so good for my body.
Yeah.
And then right after that, like we went to Squamish and I started to climb a little bit. But climbing took a lot longer because I have really loose joints in general.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that like, even before I got pregnant, I struggled with injuries with like my ligaments. And then when you get pregnant and are nursing, your joints get even looser.
Right.
And so I was just really mindful mm-hmm. to be careful of that.
Yeah. And I think that's an important word.
Yeah.
You have to be really mindful of it. It's not everyone's going to have the same response to it as you
totally,
did, but
yeah.
as long as in any situation, as long as you're mindful of what's going on and paying really close attention, I think that's the number one thing you can do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause like you said, everybody's totally different. My friend Lynn was 100% fine, like climbing right out of the get go,
right.
you know, and running right out of the get go. And she just has that body type.
Yeah.
And then I think I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. You know, I'm like had many physical things go wrong or
yeah.
whatnot.
And had you climbed up right up until the birth?
I climbed until about 6 or 7 months
okay.
pregnant, but pretty easy. I'd say because I felt my joints getting looser and, you know,
right.
you're gaining weight, I felt then that put more strain on it.
Yep.
So I would go out and we would just climb really easy routes, long routes in Yosemite.
Sure.
And that felt awesome to me.
Yeah. And it's good to be around moving. You know, I have a couple of women, Molly and Abby, who are both pregnant and both training through their pregnancy, doing quite a bit of strength training, really controlled strength training, and climbing quite a bit. And Molly's writing a blog about her, you know, training through her pregnancy.
Awesome.
And, it's just, it's inspiring to me to see them willing to go, but it's also scary for me because I'm like, I don't know how much to hold you back because I'm not right there with you every single day. Totally. So I have to trust you to be mindful and not go too hard.
Yeah.
You know, and just understand your own body. And I think that's a really important part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It was a big learning lesson for me because I had never kind of, I'd never given up my body to something else before. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
And it, and especially for athletes who are so in tune with their body, you know, every little thing, and you know when something's wrong, or you know when you can start to push or whatnot. And all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, like, I'm growing this human and my body's changing and how am I doing this and what should I be doing? So,
yeah. Did it ever, and I'm just curious about this. It's not anything I've gotten from your writing or interviews or anything else, but was there ever a time where it was almost, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, not angry at being pregnant, but because you're going through these changes where it's not, you're not just responsible for you anymore. Was there ever a time where you're like frustrated by it?
For me, it was the opposite, actually.
Okay.
I was always frustrated by injuries, you know, so mad at myself and my body. I'm like, why am I getting injured?
Right.
But for me being pregnant, it was actually kind of a relief, right? Does that make sense? It was,
yeah, for sure.
It was like, oh, wait, I do have a reason now that I don't have to be out there climbing
trying
hard
super and, hard.
Yep, yeah. And pushing all the time.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of, it was a relief. And that's not to like gloss over the fact that you're like, God, my joints hurt and I can't sleep on my stomach. And, you know, and why do my hips hurt so bad? And, you know, obviously there's all that sort of thing that you're kind of is completely uncomfortable and a nuisance and not to be glossed over. But I was never, I don't think I ever woke up when I was pregnant and said, I really wish I could like go climb El Cap in a day right now.
Right.
It was more like, oh, I get to go hang out at the boulders and kind of just relax.
Yeah. A lot of my friends who are in the same, you know, age group as you, came up around the same time, had this around the same age as you're talking about, had this like this moment where they were, oh, now I remember why I love climbing again.
Totally.
And, yeah, you know, I've been pushing so hard and putting so much emphasis on my performance, and being Beth Rodden,
yeah,
or whoever it is, for so long that I'd forgotten why I love this thing.
Totally.
And finding it again. Was that something that happened for you through the pregnancy?
I'd say through injuries and pregnancy, 100%. Yeah. I had, you know, after, like right around the same time as the divorce, my body just started breaking down. I'm, you know, I'm sure it's all connected, like the emotional anguish and everything. And I was like so desperate to climb and achieve again that my body was just like, it's enough, you know? And so during that time, it was several years. You know, I went from like climbing 514 down to climbing like 5'6" or whatever. And,
right,
and I was kind of like, well, should I even climb anymore? And just slowly going out and climbing all these things and with people that I'd never climbed with before, I was like, oh, wait, this is why I love climbing. And so that's where, and I feel like I kind of owned climbing again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's like, cool.
Yeah. And so then, but that finding that ownership again gave me the courage, I think, to be able to say, okay, let's try and have a family. Because being in that previous mindset of always pushing harder.
Right.
Then I was just like, how are we going to do this with a kid?
Family's just an obstacle.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to climb that. You know, so it was just this thing that I couldn't even wrap my head around, where all of a sudden after the injuries, I was like, well, I'm climbing 5'6" and I'm still loving it. So even if I only climb one day a week with a kid, I'm going to still love it. And so that kind of gave me the courage to take that next step, which I feel like is really amazing.
Cool. So when Theo was first, you were first getting out with Theo and you Squamish was your first climbing trip, you said?
Yep.
How was that first trip, having, you know, first trip with the baby?
It was rough, I'd say. There's a bunch of reasons why it was rough. We decided to drive up there, which is like 20-something hours, you know? Yeah. And I was like, he'll just sleep the whole
time. That's a long trip for a baby.
Yeah, it was I'm pretty sure we ruined him for the car for the rest of his life from there. And then also, like, we have these amazing friends up there, and they let us stay at their house, but I was still, like, struggling with breastfeeding, so I'm like, trying to walk from our bedroom without my shirt on to put on medicine. And, you know, it was just like, I was just a mess, you know, like walking around and like you're leaking and milk. And so it was just like all this stuff. So it was hard, but I would say like, and then we spent like 4 months in Yosemite after that. And I feel like we kind of got into our groove, and then we went to Font, you know, that next spring when he was like 9 months old. And it really helped to have friends that were doing the same thing, other families, you know, because you can kind of like bumble your way through it and learn from it, what they're doing. And and then you help each other. All of a sudden, I feel like more so than entering a climbing community, which I felt was super inclusive when I first came, and it was like this tribe that you enter, was the parenthood tribe, I feel like, was even more welcoming, because you can just like lay it out there.
Yeah.
You know,
and I was saying to you earlier, I was looking through your blog today, and I was really surprised by how many men comment and respond to your questions and ask you questions. And I mean, it makes me proud a little bit of men, because I don't think that's the space where a lot of men would be willing to say they spend their time, you know, but I think it's an important thing. And I thought it was great that you have all those men and women commenting and asking questions and communicating with you.
Yeah. No, it's been, I mean, I just had somebody write last week, is like, I'm a single dad and, you know, I'm doing this. I'm like, man, that's amazing. You know, single parents, I feel like, are on the next level.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, I think it's awesome. I mean, I feel like everybody's in it, you know, and might as well share and help everybody, and you're all just trying to get through the day, so.
Yeah. So other than choosing to drive to Squamish, were there other like big mistakes, things you wouldn't do again on those first few trips?
Yeah, so I wouldn't drive like 20 hours. And if you can't, but then this is me having like rough nursing issues. Like, I think your own space to kind of just like bumble around, or maybe with somebody who's like at the same stage, or who you're super comfortable with.
Right, a close friend.
Totally, exactly, that I can like walk around without my shirt on because of that. Mistakes, that is a good question. I'm trying to think of
like early. Out at the boulders or out at the crag, were you ever out there and thought, geez, I wish we had this?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely forgot diapers a couple times.
Okay.
But again, we were lucky enough that like friends were around. Right. They were like not the right size, but in a pinch.
Yeah. It's better than no diaper.
Exactly. God, we just, you know, I think we did a lot of trial and error, right? Mm-hmm. And so for different trips, like, and I think every kid is so different.
Yeah. And instance, I think it's okay to do trial and error.
Totally.
We want to get it exactly right as parents.
But you're not gonna. Yeah.
You're gonna screw it up just like every parent before you.
Yeah.
And so trial and error, I think, is fine.
Yeah. No, I think it's necessary. Yeah, we just learned what worked for us, I guess. And so like Theo loved the ergo, right? Like the thing that, and he would.
That's the carrier?
It's the carrier. I mean, he napped like months of his life, either on me or Randy, or like maybe on my parents a couple times. But like, that's what we did. So we actually never had to bring a stroller anywhere we went. But then other friends of ours, like that was their key, right? Was like napping in the stroller.
Right.
And so, and we've had a lot of friends. And when you go to Europe, like that's how you walk in Font and you walk around a boulder and there's just like a Bob or a pram or whatever. And that's how all the kids sleep.
Right.
And they just bring them out and put them in these things and they sleep everywhere. I think that's like a key thing for some people is you bring the Bob and that's your like napping thing.
Yeah. I've seen people at the Red have like the little pop-up playpen type things.
Yeah.
Did you ever have anything like that?
You know, that worked really well. Like Becca, both of her kids napped in the tent really well. Like they have those Kidco tents.
Yep.
Theo, like, he took a couple naps in there, but really like the ergo was it, or on a crash pad.
Gotcha.
Like we could get him to sleep in the ergo and then like transfer him down on the crash pad and go climbing. So yeah, I think just like find your thing. So trial and error on that and then kind of stick to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I'm totally asking you to think back here and on the spot too, but
yeah,
were there things that you had to have in your bag? You had diapers, obviously. Mm-hmm. Anything you might not think of?
Well, for me, it was like all this. I mean, I hate to keep mentioning this, but if there's any women out there that struggle with breastfeeding, for me, it was like all care around nursing stuff. Because I'd say until like, I mean, I think I had my last mastitis infection around like 8 months or something like that. So for a while, like that was an issue for me. I always brought that. And then
I think it's great that you were getting out.
Yeah.
And still doing it, you know, not letting it keep you inside or hiding or whatever it might be. So I think it's important.
Yeah.
You know, make sure you're bringing that stuff with you. Bring the things that are going to help you care for yourself.
Yep.
As well.
Yeah, totally. I always had enough food because it just seems like you never know. Changes of clothes for sure, especially like outside. Because if you want to be outside all day and, I don't know, they crawl through a puddle or something like that.
When my daughter was little and we'd go to the Red, it's basically a sand pit at most crags. So she would be an absolute filthy mess covered in sand.
Yeah. You know,
like Red River sand dust.
Yeah.
From head to toe.
Totally.
And she loved it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, you're not getting in my car like that.
Yeah, exactly. What did you guys do at the Red with the ticks? Because we had tick epics at Font last year.
You know,
the kids are crawling in it, you know?
Yeah. You know, at the crags, it's not a big problem usually because there's not a lot of foliage right at the crag.
Okay.
But there were several times, one in particular, Caitlin and I were walking through the woods just out walking around.
Yeah.
And we must have walked through a tick nest or something.
Yeah.
Because the next day I remember sitting at the crag with her and picking ticks off of each other for like an hour.
Oh God.
And we each had hundreds of tiny little ticks all over us.
Yeah.
So it was just a matter of, for us, it was just check a lot.
Yeah. You know,
spend a lot of time checking. And if I find one on me or someone nearby finds one on them, then I'm right to her looking around.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
But other than that, we didn't really encounter them a ton.
Okay.
Because at the crag, they're really not an issue.
That's good to know.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year in Font, like, I think everywhere's just getting warmer or changing, obviously. And so Font was so warm last year. And Theo had one embedded, and then poor Ingrid, she was, you know, just like a year old, and she had these teeny tiny five of them that we had to get out, and you're just like pinning. That's when having a community comes in, right? Because you need like three adults to like pin down this 1 year old and take out the ticks. But
So do you have like a normal community of other parents that you travel with, climb with, or do you sort of gravitate towards the people at the crag who have their own setup?
We're really fortunate, and I guess this happens in a lot of communities, climbing and not, but our friends kind of all had kids around the same time, you know,
right
in California. And so the people that we climb with the most, they'd, you know, they're either a few months younger than Theo or a couple years older, and there's a bunch of kids and they all play. And then when we travel, it seems like one or two of those families might come, and then we'll meet up with some of our friends from around the country that also have kids. But, and for sure in Font, Font's like the best place we've found so far for families or whatnot.
Yeah.
And I think the whole world knows it because it's all,
that's where all the kids are now.
Yeah. Just from everywhere you go, and there are like Swedish families and, you know, German families. And it's kind of cool, actually. It's like
I haven't been. I want to go.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
When you're traveling internationally, are there cruxes with bringing Theo along, especially when he was really young, you know, those first trips?
Yeah. I mean, I had a ton of anxieties around that because I think I'm just kind of an anxious person. So I was like, he hasn't had his MMR and he's going to get measles. And, you know, so that sort of thing when he was really young. And then like once he got all his vaccinations, it came a little easier. But I mean, we went to South Africa last year and we're going again this year. And I think it's been a good learning lesson for me in letting go, actually. Mm-hmm. And just being like, well, this is what we're doing and we're going to expose him to the world. And it's a great learning lesson for everybody. But crux is, I mean, just as you know, just going anywhere with a kid takes, you know, five times as long. You're like, okay, you text your friend, you're like, okay, lots we're going to leave. Yeah, exactly. And you text somebody and you're like, I'm going to leave in 20 minutes. And then an hour and a half later, you're like, and we're still not out the door, but you don't know what you're doing, but you're doing something.
It doesn't get any faster when they're 16.
Right.
It's just as slow. So.
Yeah. Great.
Mine's 20 now and she loves the stand in the mirror and put on makeup. So
that's what takes
it takes
forever.
Even longer now.
Yeah.
So luckily she can drive. So I just be like, well, you can just meet me there.
Yeah. You're like, I'm leaving. I'm going to go get some pitches in before you get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Crux is, I mean, I think everything just takes, just be like 100% more patient with yourself because it's going to take a lot longer for sure.
Do you always have that third person around or an extra group around or how often is it just you and Randy and Theo?
Let's see, for the second half, we did 3 months abroad last year. And for the second half of our trip, it was just the three of us, which was nice. I mean, we'd meet up with people randomly, obviously, because there's other people at the climbing area.
Sure, yeah.
But, and this year, I feel like it's going to be kind of similar in that we know a bunch of people going for the first half of our trip to Font, but then I'm sure we'll just meet random people. So a lot of times it's just us. And then Randy has this nice thing worked out with his work where he does like 3 months remote and then 3 months in the city and then 3 months remote. So
cool. That's a cool setup.
So when he's working in the city during the week in Yosemite and stuff, it's just me and Theo. And then he started preschool this year there. So that's been a big change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you getting out while he's in preschool?
Yeah. I'm alternating days right now. So he's in half day preschool or whatnot. And, so I climb one day and then I'm working on writing a book the other days. So it's like,
cool.
climb right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. When you are on these trips, what sort of schedule do you keep for climbing? Is it dictated a little by Theo? Like, is he able to do like a two on one off kind of a thing, or does he get fatigued after a certain number of days going back out to the boulders and you'd rather do something else?
He's pretty good actually. And until Randy and I have always just alternated days. So it'll be like Randy's day to climb and I'll hang with Theo or it'll be my day to climb and he'll hang with Theo. And when there's other kids around, then that's the best because then maybe both of us could climb.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. And I could see if there are other kids around, that's an ideal setup because Theo's going to love
totally
being out there with the other kids anyway.
Yeah.
What kid doesn't want to just go get dirty with other kids all day long?
Yeah. And like run around with sticks in the forest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like last year in Font that happened, there was probably like 8 kids under 6 or whatever. And it was the first time Randy and I were like, wow, we can actually go climbing together.
Yeah, yeah. So. And you can go out, if you're alternating days, you're probably going out almost every day.
Oh, we're going out every day. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But cool. I don't know, like some of our friends have kids that are really good self-entertainers and can climb like together and that. And like, I was a terrible self-entertainer as a child and Theo's kind of adopted that. So, I mean, I think it just depends on your kid, you know?
Sure.
And so for us, it's just, that's what we found has worked for our family.
Yeah. And I think knowing your kid's personality is really important. Like you just said, it's going to depend on whether your kid's good at being self-entertained. My daughter was for the most part, but I definitely saw things blossom when there were other kids around.
Totally.
You know, building little forts out of sticks or whatever it was. So I think that's important, you know, pay attention to what they enjoy doing and then sort of build your schedule around that.
Totally.
Making that work out.
Were there a lot of kids when your daughter was young out at the crag? Like it seems like I've seen it grow more, but obviously climbing's growing more. So I don't know if it's, you know, the one or the other, or I'm just curious how that.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is climbing's growing more. Mm-hmm. When she, 20 years ago, you know, I guess it was about 18 years ago, 17 years ago, I first started taking her to the crag, mm-hmm. and probably 14 years ago when she first climbed, mm-hmm. There weren't that many kids, mm-hmm. at least in the red.
Right, okay.
They just weren't that common. Mm-hmm. So there weren't a lot of opportunities to just hang out with other kids. And I wasn't lucky enough to have that. Mm-hmm. All of my friends are having kids at the same time. So we've got a bunch of climbers with kids, mm-hmm. you know. It would have been great if we did, but just wasn't the case. So, yeah. So we were always kind of a solo crew. Mm-hmm. It would usually be myself and a partner plus Caitlin. Mm-hmm. And luckily, she loved climbing and was into it early on. Mm-hmm. So that was helpful. Mm-hmm. And I didn't ever push her to be a climber.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that with Theo? Is it something that you're going to gently nudge him into, or wait to see what he comes up with?
No, yeah, I definitely don't want to. I kind of want to let him dictate.
Yeah.
When he wants to climb, if he ever wants to climb.
Right.
I think I'm probably a bit scarred from growing up in the kid comp scene and seeing so many kids just get pounded and pushed by their parents. And I got so turned off by that.
Yeah.
And I had the opposite experience with my parents. And, you know, like climbing was mine.
Right.
And I was the one pushing. And I just saw it just ruin climbing for so many kids. And I don't want to do that to Theo, you know.
Yeah.
So if he wants to, awesome. You know, that could be. I think it'd be even better if he did it with his friends, because then he could own it in a different way, right?
Sure.
Rather than that's what I do with my mom and dad.
So. Yeah, yeah, and we've seen, you know, quite a few generations pick it up.
Yeah.
From their parents doing it, mm-hmm. Just pick it up and then take it off and make it their own thing.
Totally.
So. Certainly a feasible idea. And frankly, I think it's more feasible. I think it's more likely if you're not pushing them into it.
Totally.
You know, Chris Linder was a good friend of mine, and I know he was sometimes pushed into climbing, mm-hmm. and kept trying to make comebacks, but it never really stuck for him.
Yeah.
At least in the public way. He may still be climbing for all I know, which would be great, and I hope he is. I hope he found where he really loved it and was able to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. But we've seen it with several people. I'm not trying to single out Chris or Tom for that matter.
Yeah.
But we've seen it several times, like you said.
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen it a lot. I'm curious. So you were able to sport climb, though, with just a partner.
Yeah.
Because Caitlin was so chill and good
at it. She was self-entertained.
That's so awesome.
She was good at it. And it was at a time already where she understood enough about climbing. Mm-hmm. I never really went climbing with her when she was really little. Mm-hmm. So I have no experience there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would only go climbing on the weekends when I didn't have her.
Mm-hmm.
So she already understood climbing enough to cheer me on a little bit.
That's so
and
cool.
Want to watch while I climbed.
Mm-hmm.
And those were huge moments, you know, being able to hear her voice cheering me on,
mm-hmm.
was big. But it worked out fine.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know,
that's cool.
And especially in a place like the Red, where you get, you know, destroyed, pumped, and it takes, you know, you're taking 45 minutes or an hour in between routes. So mm-hmm. even if there are two of you, it's not like you're trading belays back and forth and back and forth.
Right.
It's more like you both climb and then there's a 45-minute period where no one's climbing.
Right.
So
you hang out.
So you get a lot of time to hang out and build forts and play in the dirt.
Cool. That's awesome. Know. That's awesome.
So what have you found between sport climbing and bouldering? I know you said on your blog that bouldering is definitely the easier thing.
For us right now. Yeah. We went to Sayus last year for a couple weeks, but our friend Emily signed up for the family scene for 2 weeks. So we did alternating days.
How was the hike up there?
Randy was a champion.
He carried Theo
He carried
up.
Theo. I mean, nice. Theo would walk like whatever for 10 minutes some days. But for the most part, we just kind of like hammered it up there.
Mm-hmm.
So he was 2 at the time.
I can't imagine there's much of a kid scene at Seuss.
No, but the Airbnb that we rented was rad because they had like a little girl just a little bit older than Theo, and they had like a trampoline and they had other things. Oh, cool. So there was a few days where Theo was like, I just want to play with Louisiana. And we were like, great, that's fine. Well, like one of us will hang out here with you. And
yeah.
So yeah, but no, there's definitely not. I've seen some people, not I don't know them well, that have gone, but maybe with their kids a little bit older. Although no, that's not true, because Becca and Tommy, they took Fitz when Fitz was like a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we've mainly bouldered. I have to say I do miss rope climbing though. But I think we're getting closer to the place when Theo can be a little bit more self-entertained and, you know.
Yeah, I think for me it was definitely around 5 or 6 is when it really got good.
Yeah, that sport makes climbing. Sense. Yeah.
There was definitely a period when she was really young when I had stopped climbing altogether to focus on music.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that period that I completely missed out on learning how to climb with a toddler.
Right, you know? Yeah.
That would have been difficult.
Yeah. And yeah, that's what we found, like, that's why I feel like we're just kind of getting there, because before, you know, when you're sport climbing, you're actually tethered in.
Right.
Like even the belayer. So if they like crater or something happens, right, you can't just be like, you're off belay, I'm going. Whereas, you know, bouldering, you can kind of run and,
yep,
and do something. So
yeah, that third person comes in,
mm-hmm,
really important in sport climbing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. So, but I kind of just looked at this as like a phase where we'll boulder primarily for a bit.
So camping versus hotel. Do you guys ever camp with Theo? Is it mostly, I'm sure, you know, like you said, you're renting an Airbnb when you're taking these long international trips.
Yeah.
When you take shorter trips in the U.S., do you camp?
Yeah. So we usually, you know, go up to Tuolumne in the high country in the summer, and mm-hmm, we camp up there. Cool. And Theo loves camping. Like, he asked to go camping all the time.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because he's going with his best friend a lot of the time, but
now define camping for me, because in today's climate, there are several levels of camping.
Yeah. yeah. So we don't have a sprinter, but we have only done a tent a couple times. We just have like a pickup truck.
Okay.
And so, you know, we put a bouldering pad in the back, and then we've put this piece of plywood across like the top of our feet, you know, type of thing. And then so Theo sleeps on the plywood.
Oh, cool.
And then we sleep on the...
It's like a little miniature bunk bed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yep. Yeah. So that's what we do.
I'm sure he likes having his own little platform too.
Yeah. It's awesome, actually. And before, like in the very beginning, we didn't have like a little, you know, piece of 1x2 or whatever. And he like...
Little rail. He'd just roll off.
He'd tumble onto us in the middle of the night. We're like, ah, sorry, buddy. So then we put that in. But yeah, we did like a trip to the Southwest, climbing in New Mexico and stuff for like 3 weeks doing that. And
cool.
That was, and we have a big dog too. So he like sleeps in the front of the cab, you know?
Oh, gotcha. Do you have pictures of that setup anywhere on your blog?
Oh, in the blog. No, maybe I should put something up or.
Yeah.
It's a good, I mean, it works out great.
Yeah, if not, I'll get like, something from you and post it up when we put this up.
Totally, yeah, I can just send it to you. Yeah, I don't know how it would work if you had a second kid. Maybe it would work okay until, like, Theo co-slept with us until, whatever, like 9 months or 10 months or something. So right. I think when they're young and could co-sleep,
mm-hmm,
and other people, I'm just a terrible sleeper, as we discussed, so I needed, like, space. But
yeah.
I know other people that co-sleep, you know, way longer. And so then it would work if you had a second. But I don't know if that would work for...
Mm-hmm.
For people with two kids, though.
So. Yeah, I like the little platform.
Yeah,
it's, and that, I think that might work with a couple of kids. I mean, the platform would have to be a little bit bigger.
Yeah, you'd like widen it. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But that could be fun. And you know, thinking back to when you said that you had a little platform, I thought back to when I was a kid and how cool that would seem.
Yeah,
to have my own little platform in the, you know, in the space.
Yeah, totally.
Be so cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, it works out great for our little unit, how we have it. I mean, obviously, like, it's not great if it's like dumping rain and like you're trying to cook in there, whatever, but for summertime camping, it's fantastic.
Has there been talk of we should get a camper, sprinter, something, or are you just this is fine?
This works for us for now. I'm kind of like, one, where would we get the money? Two, I'm like, sure. Would we really use it? Because how we have our life set up right now, it's like we're in Yosemite in the fall, where we have our little place. We're in Europe in the spring, and then we're basing out of the Bay in the summer and the winter. So it's kind of like, maybe if our lives totally changed and Randy took like a remote job and we wanted to travel around the country, then maybe we would do something different. Yeah. But for our needs for camping right now, this seems good.
Yeah. Can we switch gears a little bit?
Totally.
And I want to talk a little about your climbing and how it's evolved to this point. You know, I said I was reading your blog a little earlier, and there was a post that I thought was really great that talked about finding a passion and how that passion has to be something you can grow inside of, or you just get bored with it, like you did with tennis. But climbing was something that, because you switched from comps to outdoor climbing to big wall climbing, that you could constantly grow and find new things to do. So climbing became your passion, and you mentioned that motherhood has become this new passion for you.
And it does
fit the requirements. You know, it's something you can grow, you can constantly learn, you can always get better.
You have to
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it's replaced the passion for climbing, or is the passion for climbing growing back? Has it always just been there? What's it like now?
That's a really good question. It's definitely not replaced it. And I don't have two kids, but I wonder if it's kind of what people say, that your heart just grows bigger when you have another kid, right? It doesn't, like, you don't replace it.
Yeah, you just make more space in there.
You just make more space. I would say my, like, that need, I don't feel that need to have to go climbing if it's just not working one day anymore, right? Whereas I used to wake up and, like, if it was supposed to be a climbing day, or if it was supposed to be a day that I went on my project and I didn't do it, like, that was the end of the world, right? Like, yeah. I was failing and, like, the world ended that day. Whereas now, if it's like you wake up and Theo's sick or whatever, and you're just like, and you had climbing plans, you're like, well, this is where I'm going to focus my energy today, right? Is on that. And I feel that focus and that energy, I don't feel upset by that, you know, that I don't go climbing. Whereas I definitely used to feel that, you know, I would feel jaded if I didn't get to go out and climb. Yeah. But now I'm kind of like, but if I wake up and I'm supposed to go climbing and, like, Theo's in preschool and I get to, then I'm so psyched, you know, like, it's still there. And I'm like, so excited.
It sounds like it's become a healthier, more mature passion.
Oh yeah, I think so.
You know, where it might have, for so many of us, bordered on obsession.
Oh,
in an unhealthy way sometimes.
Yeah.
To the detriment of other parts of your life.
For sure.
I think that's what it sounds like to me, is it's become a more healthy, mature passion.
Yeah. It was a really, like, I mean, amazing in so many ways way to live, but kind of like this addictive way, like set a goal, see how hard you can push yourself, see how big you could dream.
Yeah.
And then once that was done.
I wish people could see your eyes right now, because your eyes get really big and so excited.
Yeah.
And that's how it feels. It almost feels like too much.
Yeah.
When you look back at it.
Yeah. You just, like, set this huge thing. You're like, maybe I can do it. And then you do it and you're like, can I do something even bigger? You know?
Yeah.
But then that's just unsustainable. At least it was for me. Mm-hmm. You know, that just wasn't, at some point in my life, you know, I just felt like I wanted something different and more, you know, that couldn't satisfy everything anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Do you think there will ever be another project in a healthy way, like The Optimist or Meltdown,
right,
or something that could become all-consuming if you let it?
I don't know, I should ask you this, like, maybe when Theo's older. I just don't feel like I can be the mom I want to be but also have an all-consuming project at the same time, mm-hmm. because I just know how I used to be with projects, and then I know how I want to be there for Theo, and I don't see those two things how I used to be with projects. Perhaps if I found a new way with projects, a better balance, then I mean, I still have a list of things I want to do.
Right.
For sure. I mean, I don't know if you ever...
Do you have an actual physical list?
No, I don't actually. Yeah.
I'm curious.
I know a lot of my friends do. They have like, for every trip they go on, they have like a list. I'm like, how do you find the time to compile that? Like, I just have this list in my head. I'm like, oh, I'd be cool to do this. I'd be cool to do that. And, but, I mean, I tried for years after Meltdown, but my body was just like shutting down.
Yeah.
And so it's not like I don't have that desire to climb hard again.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be the difficulty of the Optimist or Meltdown.
Yeah.
To be consuming.
Totally, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right now, when Theo's this age, I just can't see myself getting wrapped up in a project, if that makes sense.
I think that's a good, honest answer.
Yeah.
For me, I climbed my hardest routes and hardest boulder problems after the age of 40. Mm-hmm. So it was when my daughter was grown and, you know, while 16 was a struggle for sure.
Yeah.
I think that only served to heighten my dedication.
Right.
Both to her and to climbing.
Right. That's so awesome to hear.
Because it really forced me to focus, you know, on different things at different times. So I don't think that your answer is saying that you can never have that again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think this is what I see now. And that's as far as I'm willing to look ahead.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. I think that's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, saying, oh, in 15 years, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
You know, none of us really know if that's what's actually going to happen. So
totally.
Saying that stuff is mostly bullshit. You know, we're just trying to convince ourselves.
Yeah, totally.
So I think that's a good, honest answer.
Yeah. I used to be such a planner. Like, I'm going to do this, and this is going to be then, and that's going to be then. And I think that's one thing that motherhood, you just have to kind of let go of. You're just like, well, we'll see where we are.
What's interesting, you say that's something you let go of, because there's a pretty high level of planning has to happen as a mother.
Yeah.
It's just different planning, and it's not planning. It's not planning in the same way. It's not a selfish planning.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that you made that distinction.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I would bet you do a lot of planning right now.
Oh, yeah. We do a lot of planning.
Yeah.
Less concrete life planning, more how we're going to get out the door today.
Yeah. I think that's important. Does it still feel like a junk show to you?
Oh, my God. Every day. Yeah. Yeah. That's an exaggeration for sure. Not every day, but yes, it still does. Because you wake up and at least for me, I wake up and I feel like I'm doing something for 3 hours and we're still not out the door, you know? And
right.
I'm like, but it's not like I've just been sitting here.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you're like making breakfast and you're making lunches and you're getting people dressed and you're like getting to the bathroom and you have to go to the bathroom. You have to get dressed and all of a sudden... So.
All the things your parents did to get you to the climbing gym on time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny when it all comes back around, huh?
Totally. Yeah. No, my parents have, because I'm always climbing, like, was I like this? And they're like, oh, yeah. I'm like, you got it from me.
Yeah, age old question.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what's it look like from here for you? Are there plans? Are you just taking it one day at a time like you say you are?
I mean, there are like we're going on a trip again this year.
Right.
Overseas.
Are you making any climbing goals at all? Or just just waiting to see what happens?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like getting out and climbing. I guess it happens each day. I'm like, oh, I'm feeling okay. Maybe I'll go try this. Or, oh, like, I'll just kind of take it as, but I don't go, like, I don't have a list on our trip. I'm like, in font, I want to do X, Y, and Z. That's totally not how I have planned out that trip. Okay. I'm like, we're going to font, we're going to Switzerland, and we're going to South Africa. And that's like all I know.
Yep.
And then I'm also writing a memoir. And so that's like something that I'm working on.
Yeah. I'd call that a pretty damn big project.
Yeah. It's a big project. Yeah.
Yeah. That might be harder than Meltdown.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm like trying to slowly pick away at it.
Yeah. I talked to Tommy on the podcast this summer and he said that writing the book was the hardest thing he'd ever done.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And that he really had to focus in like he would on a big project to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, no, I think for some people it probably comes easy and some people it probably doesn't. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I enjoy writing, but I find it to be a great challenge.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think it's probably a good thing that you're not forcing yourself to be climbing goal oriented. You know, I think it's necessary for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But having the history that you've had of first the comp scene, then pushing yourself during this time of, you know, trying to reconcile the fact that your identity was as a climber who did hard things.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and now refinding that love of it, it's probably a smart thing to just let it come and be excited about what you're climbing on at the moment. And if you want to try something hard, try something hard. And if you don't, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's probably a smarter decision than, oh, I really want to climb this V10 in font or whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that would kind of ruin my trip, I think.
Yeah.
You know, no, but, it's been awesome actually, that revelation or that discovery, the injuries so many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've just seen so many of my peers and friends that they were in that same state, and once they couldn't climb hard again, then they stopped.
Right.
You know, that's it.
Yeah. But I've talked quite a bit about doing a Where Are They Now podcast.
Yeah.
Talking to some of those young crushers who just disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I feel that like climbing has so much to offer so many different people. Like it can be whatever you want it to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can be like the old Blizzards going out there when you're 80, like
right.
dusting off your shoes and climbing up the easy climbs. But, or you can piddle out in your late 20s and that's it.
Yeah.
So I'd rather be the old Blizzard.
Yeah, totally. Me too. Yeah. Me too. And I'm glad you didn't. That you weren't one of those young crushers who disappeared. I think you're bringing a good voice, you know, and like I said, reinventing yourself, finding this space where your voice is really important. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that that's happening, that climbing is maturing for you.
Yeah, you know? No, me too.
I think that's cool. Where can people find you online? What's your...
Well, I have a blog that I should be doing more on, but I'm writing the book, so that's kind of taking a lot of my time.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot on there.
Yep.
So
yeah. So it's just BethRodden.com, and then my Instagram account is mainly pictures of Theo. I have a Facebook page and.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely link to that. Send people there, and I know you had a post on your blog with some of the products that you really loved.
Oh yeah.
I'll definitely link to that as well, because I think a lot of people, it's nice to just buy the good product and not have to do the trial and error by screwing it up over and over. So
yeah, and I'd say like find whatever works for, you know, you and your family for sure.
Yeah.
Like that's, I mean, there's gonna be, I think that's the cool thing about this community and probably every community of parents, is like you get to see what people do and then you get to like take little tidbits from here and little tidbits from there and make it your own. And I think that's kind of cool about parenting. There's like no one way to do it, you know.
Yeah.
You get to figure out what works. So
Cool. Well, that's perfect, Beth. I really appreciate you taking time to sit down, even though you were delayed getting here, and I know you got a busy schedule while you're here. So
no, thank you. Thanks for thinking of me. It's an honor.
Maybe the thing I appreciate most about this conversation with Beth is that she doesn't pretend to have all the answers. You know, she actually threw me off a bit when she asked, or when she said, you know, maybe I should ask you. I go into these conversations with a genuinely curious desire to learn, and it's obvious to me that Beth did the same thing, and I appreciate that a ton. So thanks, Beth. The time is much appreciated, as well as the great conversation. Let's do it again. And for the record, should you decide to find another mega proj, no matter what the grade attached to it is, count me into your cheering section. That's another thing I respect about what Beth has to say. Her identity was entirely as a climber, from teenager to adult. That's what she was. And when she made the decision to re-identify as a mother first, I think it showed a level of maturity that many people find hard to come by. And I think we can all learn from that, whether it's being a mother or a father or a structural engineer or a musician or whatever. It's okay to follow what you're passionate about. You're still a climber, and climbing will still be there. And maybe Beth's and your best years are yet to come. Thank you guys again for listening. You can find Beth at BethRodden.com. You can also find her on the Instagrams at BethRodden, all one word. You can find us at PowerCompanyClimbing.com. You can support the podcast at Patreon.com/PowerCompanyPodcast. And you can find us on the Facebooks, the Instagrams, and the Pinterest at PowerCompanyClimbing. You can look for us on the Twitter all day long. You can look for us on the Twitter forever. I don't care. You're not going to find us because we don't tweet. We scream like eagles.
This time.